Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and Isabel Hardman. So Boris Johnson today went to Yorkshire to launch a new police recruitment drive in a thinly veiled launch of his election campaign. Isabel, how did that speech in Wakefield go?
I don't think it was a particularly good speech. It wasn't helped by the fact that he chose to give it, obviously, at this police academy, and he had more than a dozen officers standing up behind him, which looked a bit like he thought he was in the middle of a coup. It's the sort of thing you expect in a country where the general has just come out of the government buildings to announce that he's in charge. So that was quite odd. And then I noticed during the speech that a couple of the police officers behind him were starting to look a bit queasy. They were standing in this sort of glaring sunlight and they'd been waiting for about half an hour before he came out to speak. And so we're out for more than an hour just standing straight up. And towards the end, one of them had to sit down, apparently taken ill, which also didn't help. Now, these things do happen. You know, soldiers faint regularly at Trooping of the Colour and so on. It's just that can just be one of those things about these ceremonial occasions. But it was uncomfortable because it was a highly political speech in front of the police. And it just didn't. We talk a lot in Westminster about optics, and very sadly, we never mean the ones behind a bar. We always mean how a speech looks to people at home watching on their televisions. It just didn't look quite right. And then it was made worse by the fact that Boris Johnson didn't structure the speech, sort of rambled from talking about public spending priorities to why there needed to be an election to how everything was Jeremy Corbyn's fault. And in the middle, broke the speech up by trying to recite the script of the police caution that they use when they're interviewing someone. And he couldn't remember. And I mean, this is a sort of, lots of people say, oh, this is a classic Boris Johnson act. You know, he pretends to not know what he's doing when actually he's planned this out ahead of time. Whatever it was, whether it was him, you know, trying to show that he understood the police or him trying to be funny, it didn't work. It just looked weird and shambolic from a man who is Prime Minister, and Prime Ministers do tend to grow in stature when they come into the job. And he was actually seeking to be re-elected so he can finish off the incredibly difficult job of the Brexit negotiations. So today has been a bad day for him, as we discussed on our earlier podcast, because his brother has quit, but he hasn't made it any better for himself either. And I watched the 6 o'clock news this evening, and the opening scenes on that were not good. And this is, you know, one of the news programmes that Team Boris are particularly focused on. They don't care about the Say programme. They do care about regional programmes and the 6 and the 10, as they call them. And the opening scenes were Boris Johnson being barracked in, I think it was in Morley at the time, and then he went on to Wakefield to give his speech. There was a man shouting, "Why are you up here near Leeds? You should be sorting out Brexit." And he was just sort of bumbling along. That's not what you want on your key news programme.
Katie, but one news line that might come out from this is that Boris Johnson said he'd rather die in a ditch than seek a Brexit extension. Do you think that's the sort of stuff that would cut through the bubble, as it were, and actually make voters think, actually, this guy's pretty determined, I'll vote for him?
I think it's quite clear that Boris Johnson is doing everything he can trying to pitch himself as a strong Brexiteer. In many ways, I think, because he actually is. It's quite clear that that is what his defining principle in government so far is. And I think die in a ditch is in keeping with that. I think it throws open a few interesting potential consequences on that. So as we spoke about earlier today, when you're looking about how you might bring about an early election, if Boris Johnson is denied that chance on Monday, when now we know he will try and bring about an election a second time under the Fixed Term Parliament Act, if John Bercow allows it, if Labour don't play along with that, he could find himself in a situation where he is stuck almost in number 10 and they try and force him to go and request this delay. What he said today, I think, is what we knew already, but I think it reinforces that point that this is a Prime Minister who under no circumstances is planning to ask for a delay, and therefore, what's he going to do? And again, I keep hearing more and more people suggesting that if all these avenues don't work, the various ones on a one bill, you know, one line bill, the Fixed Term Parliament Act, bringing your confidence vote in your own government, all that doesn't work, perhaps he would do what you would expect a prime minister to do, yeah, and resign, because that would mean that it would then be onto someone like Jeremy, yeah, Corbyn to do it. I would say on this speech, I mean, as I wrote in the iPaper, and as Isabel mentioned, this is the media strategy. It's all about the evening bulletins, and that's the big shift that they've done there. And I don't think it's great what you've heard on the news so far, but I do think the optics, if there are stills, for example, without the woman who's fainted, the optics of Boris Johnson stood in front of lots of police officers, I think is something that Number 10 obviously planned, because it is consistent with their messaging. So I still think he might be able to get something from this, even though in many ways it was a slightly disastrous and shambolic speech, because they want to seem as tough on crime as possible. There's a view in Number 10 and the government that in an election you can't be too on the right on crime. It's actually the one thing where the public will be with you when you go further to the right. And I think this is adding into the image that the Conservatives are going to be the party that's tough on law and order.
And in other news today, Northern Ireland Minister Nick Hurd has announced that he will not be standing at the next election. I mean, this is one more person from the One Nation caucus that Boris Johnson will have lost.
Yes, and perhaps some people around Boris Johnson will say, oh, well, that was easier than some of the sackings we've had to do earlier in the week, and we can continue reshaping the party in the image that we want, rather than having this decades long split over Europe. And but it is still, you know, it does still cause bruising within the party, even though the One Nation caucus are not where Boris Johnson is currently positioned, that they are a group that he took quite some effort in pitching to, and he's clearly lost their support. You know, they've been very robust on the treatment of their colleagues who lost the whip this week. One of the questions, which is, I think, is just going to be asked more and more loudly over the next few days, running into the Sunday newspapers, is how are the One Nation cabinet ministers coping with all of this? Amber Rudd, Nicky Morgan, Robert Buckland. You know, some of their colleagues see them as valuable people in government who are stopping Boris Johnson from pulling things too far to one side of the party. But so far, they don't seem to have made much progress on doing that. And Amber Rudd's interview with Katie earlier this week, you know, was obviously notable for the way that she stood up to Boris Johnson. But she appears to be being ignored. And at what point do those figures say, I've had enough? Or are they going to keep trying to give the impression that they are doing something behind closed doors in cabinet meetings to stop it from being more, in the eyes of their colleagues, more extreme?
Katie, having spoken to Amber Rudd earlier this week, I mean, what do you think figures like her and Nicky Morgan are doing in Boris Johnson's government now? Do you think that they're questioning their role? Might we see resignations in the next week or so?
I think, well, in good timing to plug the full podcast, which will be released tomorrow, I think in my conversation with Amber Rudd, she was defending her decision to serve in a Boris Johnson government. And she said that ultimately, she now gets criticism from both sides of the spectrum, from Brexiteers who don't think she's a proper Brexiteer, and from those who think that she sold out, that she was a careerist by sticking in the cabinet. But she made the point that actually, she is someone who is a party person. She's tried most avenues. She's explored as many avenues as she can to get a Brexit deal, Theresa May's plan, speaking to Labour, and she now puts her trust in Boris Johnson as the person to do that. I think that there is still a willingness amongst some of these One Nation Conservatives to try and get Boris Johnson in a place where he can try and renegotiate a deal. And I spoke to a minister today who I think falls into that same bracket politically. I get the sense these people want to stay and fight. And you have figures like David Gawke and some of the Tory rebels who are technically staying, and well, they're fighting. They had the whip withdrawn. But I think that there are some who want to actually stay in the party and have that fight, rather than fight about whether or not they can stand at the next election. Sure. I do think that the One Nation caucus, I mean, I chaired the one of the One Nation Caucus leadership hustings. And if you look at
all those years ago,
a long time ago, when they were trying to find a leader who would represent their values, I'm not sure if it's exactly going as they had hoped. But if I look at, you know, the key players in that group, a lot of those MPs are either not seeking re-election, or they have had the whip removed. So I think that is a problem. But speaking to a politician today who is in that group and is still a Conservative MP, they said that they think it's more important than ever to have the One Nation group in the Conservative Party, because they need to fight for their values louder. So I don't know if you will see people walking away from jobs. It's been a very unpredictable week, but I do think you will see people speaking up for their values louder and louder.
Katie and Isabel, thanks so much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And have you heard that Katie talked to Amber Rudd earlier this week? That is on our Women with Balls podcast that's going to come out tomorrow. So go to spectator.co.uk/balls or find it on Spectator Radio. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.